Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia podcast. It's been really humid down here in South China. My building literally has tiles falling off the walls due to the dampness. Always something interesting happening, and I guess that's why I or many love it. So today we're at episode 24, and we have a guest, Steve Marsh, a seasoned businessman doing business here, importing export products from China via Hong Kong company. He has a great straight-up advice giving all of our listeners, keeping us on the edge of our seats. Dan Sant was also with me on the interview listening, and he was just totally amazed at the value bombs being dropped on this show. So we definitely suggest you take out your pens and papers for this one and listen up. So enjoy. We are in Shenzhen, China, on Steve's here roof deck, and going to do a really special interview. So thanks, Steve, for being on the show.
Well, I hope I can be special.
You are definitely special. And we have Dan here, too. He's on the team with me and Social Agent. Okay. So, Steve, maybe we could start off with just a quick introduction of you, your businesses here in China.
Sure. Okay. Started in the audio industry back in the U.S. in Los Angeles with a company called Audio Components International. And I was basically project manager for them, going back from L.A. to China and then working in the factories, getting the projects up and running, doing the manufacturing and quality control while I was here. So I did that for 5 years. And when I was flying 19 round trips a year, I asked my boss to let me live in Asia. And he said, no, you'll never survive. So I quit my job, sold everything I owned, and had $5,000 left.
Wow.
So I decided to go back to China, got on a plane, flew over here into China, came into Fuyang in Shenzhen, and I lived in a factory in the dormitory with all the workers for 6 months, got my first order, you know, slowly progressed from there. And you know, now the company, we sell our products in 60 countries, and you know, it's an experience, and you know, it's been a lot of challenges and a lot of drama and a lot of, you know, this is the Wild West. So you basically have to fight here for everything that you get.
Yeah, definitely agree. But it's definitely still definitely a lot of opportunity.
There's a lot of opportunity. You know, the key thing is, if you're coming to China, if you get knocked down and you stay down, don't come here.
Yeah.
You better be able to get back up and start right back where you were.
I also think it's patience, right? I mean, do you think?
It's patience, but it's also planning for the unpredictable, right? You always got to plan when you do things, what can actually happen.
Yeah.
Plan for the worst, you're prepared. Right.
So we on the show talk about like Hong Kong companies and Shenzhen. So I'm just curious, you operate through Hong Kong more?
I have a Hong Kong company, and then we're a marketing office in Shenzhen. What that does is basically keeps us away from the China tax. We do pay a small tax basically on our expenses of that office. So we don't take any monies into that office. Everything comes into Hong Kong. So we're structured offshore there. We don't do any business with any Hong Kong companies, so we don't pay any Hong Kong tax. And then I don't visit Hong Kong more than 90 days or 60 days a year, so I pay no Hong Kong tax. I'm exempt.
Got it. Yeah, so that's stuff. We've had previous episodes with accountants about offshore Hong Kong companies and not invoicing receipts to other Hong Kong companies.
Right, and there's ways you can do that being offshore, right? But really, to set up a China company, the paperwork, taxation laws, everything else will make it difficult. It is really, it's probably worse than the U.S.
Yeah, I think.
Trying to keep up with the tax code and everything that's changing.
Yeah, I think they're monthly filing here and
right.
Everything, but Hong Kong is...
But here you can hire a company to do all that for you, but it's still a cost, so you have to look at what that cost is of how big a company you are, right?
So it's a really interesting story that you came here with just barely enough money in a bank account, and then you...
Like my father said, go give it a shot, and if you're broke, I'll give you a ticket, you can come back and get a job.
Awesome.
You know? But he wasn't pitching any money in there.
I think it's better to earn it yourself.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. Because then nobody can say I had part, right?
So then these speakers has been your bread and butter? Is that your...
Well, that's our core. But we've done over 300 different products. We've done set-top boxes, cable TV boxes to Australia, 100,000 pieces a year. But that was a very short-lived window. It was a 3 to 4 year window. You know, we've done solar panels. We've done just about everything. I think as long as we can look at it, we can find a good vendor that we trust, and we can make money, we do it, right?
Great. And so it's still primarily in manufacturing in China?
Definitely in China. I mean, I don't see a reason to move. I mean, you could move to another country, but then you start learning a whole new system. And all those countries are small. You know, basically all those countries are smaller than Guangdong itself.
Yeah, I agree.
So you'll get affected by economies of scale. It may be low cost now, but in 3 to 5 years, the cost will be driven up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the logistics, I'm personally not in manufacturing anymore, but I was trying to buy in Thailand while I was still buying in China. And just the complications of the logistics and...
You have to figure out how things work. Certainly, you know, I used to do business in the Philippines. right, with my old company. I did some stuff in the Philippines, and the problem was you'd finish your production, get on a plane and leave. A customs wouldn't let it leave until they got some cash kickback.
Yeah.
Right? So I moved everything here after that.
I sent stuff to the Philippines for a
We had to pay in and out.
Yeah, man. Both ways. Yeah.
They got to have good jobs, man. Somebody's got to pay the rent.
So then, I know the answer, but your Chinese is not so good. Like, mine also isn't that good.
My Chinese is survival Chinese.
Survival, yeah.
You know, I can get in the car, get ready to go in the factory, get what I need done, and get home. But, you know, about having a company here, you got to find one or two people that you truly trust, and you test those people. You know, trust is earned, not given. And here it's about testing people with trust.
Yep.
I set stuff up for my people to see if they bite, right? So it's just a difficult thing to figure out. I've had my team together for 12 years, almost 13 now. So my VP's been with me since day one. So she basically controls everything. Your translation, all my people speak as good of English as me, as well as Chinese.
Got it. I like the setting up trap. Is it called a trap or like a...
Test.
Test.
Right? I mean, you know, it's, you know, even I leave money out just to see if it... I don't do it all the time, but I do it once in a while, you know, and I've figured out that everybody around me I can trust. And, you know, the one key thing for my company, and you can take out of it what you will, is I only hire women that are married with children.
Mm.
There's no men in my company.
Interesting.
Well, they're loyal. They have a family to raise. They're not out drinking all night, right? I mean, I've had some very bad experiences hiring Chinese men here because they think after being with you for 2 weeks... they should own your company.
Yeah.
Right?
I've had that issue in the past, actually, because I've done web, and then they start to think that they're doing all the work and that you're just sitting there collecting the money.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But you put the money up that pays them their salary, that gets them the work, that pays their rent. So anyway, I don't mean any negativity by it. It's just what I've found.
Okay.
In my way. So it works for me.
Is there like one thing out of all this has kind of helped you get the success you've seen, or what's your maybe most successful?
You know, it's kind of that I say, you know, when you come here, you put your head down at work and you don't look at the bank account. You make sure you're making money, but don't focus on the dollar. Focus on the accomplishments that get you where you are. The first 4 years, I just kept my head down, and finally my father flew over and did a full audit on my business. He's like, hey, you're a millionaire. I'm like, oh, really? Great. You know, so it's really about getting in the work. You can't work 9 to 5 here. If you work 9 to 5 here, the Chinese will eat your lunch. You can work smart, but you also have to work hard, right? So I truly believe it's having a good team, working hard, working together. You know, I pay my people very well, and they participate every year in profit sharing. So there's motivation to keep them there. So I think it's truly about building the right team, never giving up, working hard.
Got it. Well, that's really great advice. So there's no easy way.
There isn't. If, like my father said, if it was easy, everyone would do it.
True. Exactly. I think it's, like you said, lasting longer than most are willing to last.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You see people, I mean, like I said, you know, you see people here that get one hit, right, and they're gone. Or the guy comes over, he puts his bank account in his girlfriend's name, the company in the girlfriend's name, the house, and the girlfriend's gone. He's got no money, and she's back home partying.
Yeah. That's definitely true. So how about failures or mistakes that you've had?
Well, you know, I truly believe, you know, it's an old saying, and I'm not the first to say it, right? You got to fail to learn. So I think I come from the old school, you know, where I learn by doing, learn by... People can tell me their mistakes, and I listen, but I still make my own. So, yeah, I truly believe there's a lot of mistakes, you know. The way we set up the company when we first got here, right? I was the director of the company. But in Hong Kong, if you're a director of a company, you pay... If they pay you any money, it's considered dividends, right? So what I did was roll offshore so that I wasn't director. I worked for the company, so now I'm considered salary, so I don't pay. Other big mistakes... You know, hire my one guy who I have a problem with for stealing my IP, right? So that's a lawsuit. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a little while. So yeah, there's been a lot, but I have to say, if you can make more good decisions than bad, you'll do all right. But I truly believe you learn by the bad decisions that you make, as long as they don't put you under.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah, about just surviving through those tough times.
Yeah, and it's not letting people have access to your money. It's about not overpaying for something you get before you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, for us, we sit on this side. You know, one of the things that I did in my company that most people don't do is I gave nobody credit. Nobody. You pay 50% deposit when you order, and you pay the other 50% before it leaves China. And guess what? We always got paid. You know, so I was fortunate I was in that position to do that. A lot of people are not, right? So it's trying to find those things that work for your business that are kind of in your niche that you can add those into your business model. You know, there's going to be however it is, getting terms or... they hold stock or whatever it is that works for your business model.
Yeah, I mean, I got beaten out of import-export. I got squeezed into giving one guy terms, and that was the one time I didn't get paid.
So. Yeah, and the problem is there is that the monies probably aren't enough to justify a lawsuit or the negative energy or wasted time,
exactly.
And he probably knew that.
Exactly.
Right.
I tried talking to a lawyer, and they said if it's under 100,000 U.S., I think it's not even worth it.
Yeah. You're exactly right.
Yeah. So it's kind of leading to the next, kind of maybe the scariest, similar failure, but some scary stories in China that you wonder.
Okay.
There's plenty.
Well, what I did was I invested in Thai spa here in Shuka, where we are, and I had a Chinese partner, another American, and a Filipino lady. So basically, I did all the construction, got everything ready, started running. The Filipino lady didn't have anything ready as far as staff or products. The Chinese guy wasn't doing anything. The other American guy wasn't doing anything. So I flew to Thailand, got everything ready. We got it running. Finally, it was losing money. So I just said, you know what? I want out. You can keep my 40 grand investment. Well, he sends the mafia to my office saying I owe 10,000. I'm like, how do I owe 10,000? I just gave you 40 grand of equity. Right? I just signed away my ownership. So I was in my office. 15 guys in the mafia came in. One got huge and 15 guys my size. They threatened to throw me off the 18th floor if I didn't give them $50,000. So we just talked. My staff's freaking out on the second floor because all girls, right?
Yeah.
So I sat there and we talked and talked and talked. You know, finally about 4.5 hours later, I convinced him to write me a receipt. I gave him $5,000, right? And I said, I'm giving you this on the term that you don't give that guy any money. So when they walked out, the guy just walked by, slapped him across the face and kept going.
Great.
You know, other crazy things are, you know, I mean, it's getting involved in lawsuits, which I'm sure you're going to bring up later. But, you know, it's truly about not, we had a guy and I did some production in Huadu up in near Guangzhou. So we'd given the master standard, all the testing was done, gave the PO, gave him a 20% deposit, which was probably about 20 grand. So I went up there to the factory and went in to see my production. He's like, you're on number 4. So I go to number 4. That's not my product. So I come back and I say, hey, can you walk out here with me and show me, waiting for the new production line to start? Is this just finishing? He's like, no, that's your product there. It's not my product. Bring the master standard. He goes, oh, we can't make that. You can take this, though. And I'm like, nope. So I'd done enough work up there and spent enough time drinking and guanxi and right, keeping it simple and kind of basic. But I'd met head of the police. So I called him and I said, have dinner with me. And my girlfriend, my staff came up. And I said, listen, here's the situation. It's 20 grand. You go get our money back. You keep 5, you give us 15. Okay. After dinner, he said, wait an hour. Went for about 2 hours, came back, gave me my 15,000. We left.
That's pretty amazing. You
know, I happen to know that guy. If I hadn't have known him, over.
True.
You know, there's so many things, you know, like my factory's trying to go direct to my customers. You know, I have a $1 million contract with my factories if they contact my customers. Or if my customer contacts them, they have to contact us immediately. So we caught him doing it. We made him pay.
Yeah, at least into the legal kind of questions.
Yeah, all those were done without legality. This one now is done, you know, full on legal.
That last story was not legal. That was just like your relationship or your guanxi.
Yeah, basically, you know, I told him he worked with a lot of trading companies. And I just said, you know what? I'll just call every trading company you work with and tell them what happened. Mm-hmm. So that means all the trading companies now are freaking out. They're going to move their business.
Yeah.
Right? Because otherwise you're going to try and steal their customers. They'll just pay me 50,000 cash to keep my mouth shut and they give me the customer back.
Great. So yeah, it's all about that relationship with the customer.
You know, sometimes the relationship with the customer saves you. And sometimes the relationship with the factory saves you. It seems like every time something happens, it's different than the time before. Mm. But you can kind of use the experiences you've had to pick solutions that might work, right? So it's a learning process. I guess it's experience, man. I really think it's experience.
I agree. I mean, like I said, I couldn't handle it personally. I did it for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I had no choice, man. You got to do what you got to do, right? There's no choice.
Yeah, I agree. So then I think there's a lot of listeners, usually with legal, we've had previous talks where you just write it off, you don't even try, but you know, I guess it's smaller size deals, right? So if you're a smaller company, a contract is mostly for the, we sometimes have communication, or at least there's the understanding between party A and party B.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, as far as really like legal.
All right, well, let me just tell you one more story. So I was doing business with a factory in Huadu. It was a factory after I moved from the other experience we had. And we had set up a payment schedule. So after we do $500,000 with the business, we get 25 days. After $1 million, we get X after X. So we had grown it, right? So after the year, we hit our goal. I went to him and I said, okay, you know, so now we're going to start paying on 30 days or whatever it was. I can't really remember. He said, nope. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, we're not going to do that. I said, well, here's the contract with your signature, your company chop, and your verbal. And he said, yep. So I said, what you're telling me is your word is no good, your company chop is no good, and your signature is no good. He said, yep. If you want to buy from us, you pay. Well, what choice you got? So that word, you know, you do it. Now, back to the legalities. I mean, I truly believe that so many people get ripped off in China because they don't know who to use for their legal work. Mm. So, you know, somebody comes in, we have a lawsuit. Oh, you need to give us 10,000 US. You know, there's a lot of angles to work, but I truly believe, number one, you have to find a legal team you can trust. And that should come from a personal reference or a friend reference. And it should be reasonable. And if your legal case is viable and there's enough money there, they will bite on a share, right? So mine's 30-70. They take 30, I take 70, I pay no money. We just had a lot of documents that were right. So, yeah, the problem is you feel helpless when something happens. What do I do, right? Do I run away? Do I try, you know, my buddy knows the mafia who probably doesn't know the mafia. You know, everybody here talks a big game, but most of it's BS, right? So it's trying to, number one, stay out of that situation, right? If people want money, make them prove, you know, okay, make the product, hold it in your warehouse, we'll come check it and we'll pay you, right? So, you know, we want to do a 20% deposit. Okay, we'll put it in a TT, in a secured deposit in Hong Kong, and when you show that you've done it, we'll release it. So there's a lot of ways, simple ways, to protect yourself until you're up and running and know who you can reasonably trust.
So I think a lot of our listeners aren't at the level you're at now. So I think a lot of them are kind of still scrapping and maybe beginning stages like you were. Maybe where do you suggest they get to that level where there's like proper contracts or relationships versus legal? And
well, honestly, I mean, you can write it. You can get a simple contract off the internet. You can have it translated. I mean, really, here in China, a contract doesn't mean much unless you're willing to enforce it. So it's truly about making people prove that they want to do business with you, and you test them with sample orders. You figure out how things work, right? I'll make a sample order. I'll pay extra. But when I place my order, you take that sample order price off my order. So it's trying to figure out the small steps that you can take to build a relationship where you feel comfortable and confident that you're not going to get your money taken or get subpar product, right? Key thing is, for all of you listeners, anything that you make or do, always make what we call a golden standard or a master standard. That means you can always reference back to it for build quality and functionality quality. So you need to run tests on everything. You build a folder. Everybody agrees. They get one. You get one. So when you go back to QC online or do AQL, which means after you're ready to ship, you go in and pull randomly, that they all match the specification. So better off you can protect yourself from the start, the better off you are.
How about your relationship with your customers?
Okay, yes.
So I had a personal where I sold to a retail store, and they gave me terms. And then the product was bad quality, but they didn't give us a spec. It didn't fail the spec that they ordered on. It was a temperature, a high temperature in the summer table that kind of like melt, like got overheated and bubbled, coating crack.
Yeah.
It wouldn't dry back, wouldn't stick back down.
That's what we release, yeah.
Release, yeah.
I understand.
I don't do that anymore.
But how did, so they didn't pay you for anything?
They ended up paying about 70%. We got them on the next order. So we gave them a credit on the next order. But they were really scaring. I mean, that was also in Shenzhen. It's like 2007 or 8. And then it was an all cap letter email when I got back to Core mobile phone emails. And it's like, we have a big problem. And they said they were going to recall it.
Well, they didn't, obviously.
They didn't.
So, you know, the thing is something like that. I mean, when you have a temperature control issue, you have to make sure that your factory has a way to temperature control it. Like I always say, man, there's only one way to make sure it's right. Unfortunately, those are things that you have to do. You know, I've slept on production lines in between dinner breaks. I've done things that to make sure when it ships out, there's no question.
Yeah.
And that means putting it in the temp chamber and watching it. Mm-hmm. Right? Watching the gauge. Yeah, it's XC for so many minutes. It's fine. Okay, we're good. There's no substitute for that, man. People come over here and think they can order from a factory and ship it and they're going to be fine. And that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the U.S. and I met friend in Vegas. He's never been to China. He's been ordering for about 5 years. He doesn't have a problem.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
Well, clock's ticking.
I think he's got to make a trip over here.
Yeah, so. You know, and another thing, what we do, my company does, we never manufacture anything. Where we're not on the mass production line, we go and we check all IQC reports for parts, incoming quality control.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do assembly online, and then we do the AQL ourselves. We do everything. Because our customers want to be able to open a container and sell the product they have. They won't open a container, have a problem, then think the whole shipment's got a problem. So that is invaluable, is checking yourself or someone you trust. Doesn't mean hire a third party.
Yeah, there's tons,
you know,
of those third.
Well, I did work for Tweeters, right, before they went out of business for a couple of years. And they said, oh, we want a third party QC company. I said, that's fine, you pay it. They hire the QC company. The QC company emails us. So how do we test speakers? Okay, we'll tell you. You know, so they paid them to come look at nothing. Right, what we gave them, and we're there actually at the same time. So some people think that a third-party QC company is great. If you know that person, to hire that person, it's different than I send one of my crew out to your product that they know nothing about to QC for that day.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. I mean, the thing is, like, with sourcing from China, there's every industry is its own. There's a lifetime of knowledge in every single product. So some people think they can buy, like, this electronic, and then a gift, and a table, and a chair, and then a light, and yeah, you can do general. You got a special one, like you're like the master of speakers.
Well, man, you know, also you can go online, and there's a lot of things that come in from CE and those guys that tell you what has to be done and what tests they have to pass. So you can do your home. You can learn metals. You can learn plastics, right? So those types of things you can learn and understand. So then it gets down to what PCB boards. Those types of things. You can do bed of nails testing, whatever it is. But you can learn what you need to do. It's just, how complicated is it? Like for us, you know, people wanted to buy flat screen TVs. And I said, number one, there's no money. And number two, it's really hard. So we just don't do that. If it's outside of our feel good area, we don't do it.
Yeah. I think that goes back to, like, you're probably getting better or good at saying no, right? Because I think saying no, there's so many opportunities and so many things coming at you in business, especially overseas in China. When I was doing it, let's do sourcing. People would give me every random product they could think
sure.
of. They want a
sure.
price. They want to buy.
We do things like, what's your minimum order quantity? What's your annual usage estimated? Right. So you can tell right there, it's a $5 product. They're going to do $5,000 a year. You know, how much time and effort do you have to put in to get that back?
So obviously, this is an English interview.
Is it?
We are in China. So what do you think is the biggest advantage, like, for a business?
You mean for me being here and working with a customer overseas?
I think so. Like, I guess...
It's trust. You know. It's communication. You know, I can write you an email and have 5 bullet points and you'll get them all. We're there and sometimes they don't get them all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's also knowing I trust you to watch my stuff. And those are things that truly... I mean, I call my company... And we are a design, development, and manufacturing company of many things. But in the end, we're an insurance policy. Right? We're an insurance policy to make sure they get product they can sell. They don't want to be focusing on their manufacturing end. They want to be focused on their sales end.
Got it.
Right?
Got it. Okay, that's really great. So I think we're at our last question, unless we got something coming up. But a listener maybe want to come to Asia. Maybe they're sitting, there's a lot of them listening in America or in
right.
Europe, and they
right.
want to come over like you or I. What would you suggest to them in maybe 2014? You know, like, the world's changed a lot. And
sure. You know, I think number one, you have to do a lot of homework before you come. And what are you coming for? What are your goals? Set your goals reasonable. Set reasonable goals so you can obtain them. Mm-hmm. If you set unreasonable goals for yourself here, you're going to be changing your timeline, right? But it's trying to do as much homework as you can before you come. What are you here for? Is it product, to help somebody build product? You design, know that product. What does it take? And look at other products in the market. You can look on Alibaba to find out pricing of something that's close to that, or the same size or same functionality or whatever it is. Learn some basic Chinese. Right? Learn to eat Chinese food because you're going to be eating a lot of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Learn to drink Qingdao beer. You know, and it's truly about preparing yourself to come here. I mean, you can land in Shenzhen, but what do? How do you open the door at that factory you want to go to? How do you get to that factory you want to go to? Who's going to translate for you at that factory? Do they have someone translating? Can they send a car to pick you up? Do you have business cards? Do you have a website? Because before a company here is going to send somebody to pick you up, they're going to see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Of some type. So I think it's truly about preparing when you come, and prepare to have some delays and failures and problems. And, you know, you can try and work on a way to try and eliminate most of those. But there's some, even today, I still get, and I'm still amazed.
God.
I'm surprised that I'm still surprised. You know, so it truly is about coming here with an open mind and a hard work ethic, work honest and work. It truly is. And now I look at you guys are very high tech. When I came here, there was, you know, I was one of those white people in town. There wasn't a lot of white people. So, but now it's very competitive for all of you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Chinese are no slouch at technology and everything else when they want to go after it. So I think you better do your research on your business plan to make sure when you come here that's something unique or a niche or something that you're trying to do. Or if not, come here and cooperate with someone that's been here a long time. Myself, you, other people.
Mm-hmm.
I can help you, give you advice, guidance, and so forth. So I think it's really, you better come here prepared, right?
The easy times are over. I mean, it's never always easy, but I think now it's like, yeah, this matured the market. You got to pick a niche in it.
But you just really have to do your homework and know what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to think about doing it in your own country. If you're going to manufacture it there, if you understand it, then you come here and you kind of got some basic idea of what you want to do,
yep.
Right? So, I mean, you guys do a lot of IT as well as product. So I think the IT industry are, you know, doing in high tech is a good future. You know, I just wanted 1% of WhatsApp.
It's only $1 billion.
$19 billion.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 1%. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But still, I mean, so there is opportunity. It's about being creative, working hard, and being careful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here is a different animal, but you can do it. If you don't try, you'll never know.
Exactly.
So at least try.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think is really great advice.
Yes. There's no reason to say don't come. Just come prepared. I think there's so much opportunity here. People like my company and their trading companies. I mean, we have a lot of engineering and we do, you know, a lot of benefit analysis of how to improve the product so we can everyone can make more money. But even working for a company that wants to sell overseas, I think a foreigner could come here, work for a company, make good money, and do sales overseas for them, right? Then you eliminate the middleman, so it's margin for everyone. And that's kind of the way the business model is going, or the Chinese are going direct.
I just got another, they're trying to hire a CEO. Sale.
But, you know, you need to know what you're doing. If you're going to do that, you need to make sure you have a good salary, a good place to live, should be supplied by them, you know, with no restriction. And you should have some type of commission structure. And you need to walk into that knowing what you want versus letting them tell you what you're getting.
Exactly.
Right.
You can't just let them push you around.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise you're working for $1,500 a month living in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to be careful. I mean, I have many, many stories about those things. But there is huge opportunity. It's just finding it.
Maybe if there's your website or some way that people want to reach out to you.
You can contact me through one of our websites is Flatline Acoustics Online. That's our speaker brand name that we distribute. You can just throw me an email through there and the sales link on Contact Us. And,
okay.
You know, and also, again, if you ever have any more questions and want to talk, come over, have a beer, and we'll figure it out.
Welcome down to Sheko, Shenzhen, China.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
We'll hang out.
All right, man. Thanks so much, man.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.
All right. That's a wrap.
Thank you, Steve, for that no-holds-bar interview. I'm sure our listeners definitely got some amazing perspectives for their own businesses from that one, so thank you very much. And we also hope to get Steve back on the show in a few months to discuss the outcome of a big legal battle he's been going through. He did mention quickly on the episode about some of his staff in the past taking customer lists and other proprietary information, so that's currently in legal action. So I'm definitely interested about the outcome, and I think this is going to be an amazing interview when we get the outcome. So it's actually really good for me to learn, and I think other listeners, that there are legal systems in place, even though people say it doesn't exist in China. So I think that's going to be an amazing one, talk about kind of like the legal structure, court systems, and documentations, and all of that, kind of like things where people say that no law exists. There is a law system here, and definitely it's going to learn all about it with Steve. So thanks again, Steve, for sharing and giving us real advice. So, okay, guys, until next week, that's a wrap.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.